Today, AFP Audio is talking to Dr. Milana Botrubek. Welcome, Milana.
Thank you.
Milana is a GP and pain medicine consultant based in Sydney and also a senior clinical tutor at the Notre Dame University in Sydney. She is one of the authors of a focus article in the March 2013 edition of Australian Family Physician titled Neuropathic Pain, a Management Update. The Beach article in the same issue reported the prevalence of neuropathic pain to be 8.5% in GP patients, with about three quarters of those having had a formal diagnosis of neuropathic pain and about a quarter having symptoms consistent with neuropathic pain without a diagnosis having been made. Can you start perhaps by telling us, Milana, what is neuropathic pain and what are some of the more common causes?
Certainly. Neuropathic pain involves central sensitization, and that then results in an ongoing perception of pain. It's quite commonly able to be diagnosed with just the nomenclature that the patient uses to describe the pain. So it tends to be shooting or stabbing. It can be burning even though there's no heat in the affected area. And that should alert most GPs that we're dealing with something quite different to usual pain that patients present when they've injured themselves or they've stubbed their toes or got an ingrown toenail.
Yep. And so what are some of the more common causes of neuropathic pain?
Well, this article we're going to be highlighting in this discourse is going to look at specific examples of neuropathic pain and those that are common and familiar to GPs, such as diabetic polyneuropathy, postherpetic neuralgia, and trigeminal neuralgia.
Yep. And so you've mentioned there's primarily a clinical diagnosis, or there are certain words that should make us think about it. Is it the sort of thing where investigations are commonly needed, or is it mainly a clinical diagnosis?
It's mainly clinically diagnosed. Unfortunately, at this stage of the game, we still haven't got a pain thermometer, and so therefore any of the kind of investigations that may be mentioned through the article appear to be confined to research people who are looking at it a little bit more closely. But GPs shouldn't feel underwhelmed with some of the screening tools that are available, because they're actually quite helpful. One in particular, which will be highlighted in the article, is the DN4, which stands for the French Douleur Neuropathique, and number four. And the reason it's four, there are four parts to the actual questioning. And the line of questioning allows for patients to be interviewed, but also includes some examination questions that the doctor will fill out.
Yes, okay. And so figure one in the article sort of highlights the key steps in diagnosis, and then there's also some general tables in table one and two that have some information on evidence-based treatments and medications. But we might start by talking about diabetic polyneuropathy, which is one of the more common ones that we see. How does that normally present?
Well, most GPs will be familiar with diabetic patients and also have a select few that will come in complaining of burning and tingling in the hands and the feet. This is the most common presentation where patients find themselves quite uncomfortable, particularly at night, where they can be finding themselves with broken sleep due to this pain.
Yeah, and so if the patient has diabetes and those symptoms, it's relatively likely to be that. How do you then go about managing it?
Well, I think the first part of the management should be to review the diabetic and glucose control and to review the meds that are being used and perhaps review even the possibility that these patients may need a tighter control. Having done that, and satisfying yourself that the actual sugar levels are pretty much under control, then one could perhaps try one of the newer anti-epileptic drugs that are called calcium channel alpha 2 delta ligands, known probably to most GPs as Neurontin or Lyrica, but that's pregabalin and gabapentin. They could be used to try and ease some of that painful perception that the patients are complaining of.
Yep, so there are sort of two elements, one of which is looking at the diabetes and the second of which is treating the pain. And so moving on from there to another relatively common condition, postherpetic neuralgia. Mm-hmm. How is that defined and how do you diagnose that?
Postherpetic neuralgia comes on after a bout of what lay people call shingles, and it is pain that is localized to the region of that affected nerve. Usually feels sort of a deep throbbing pain. Patients will complain of it even for years after. I had a patient whose clothing bothered him every time he had to lift his shirt because he had chronic airways obstruction, and every time he had to listen to his chest, I had to skirt around the area that was still very uncomfortable, and albeit there was no sign of the original shingles, his pain was exquisite.
So it can be lasting many, many years afterwards.
Indeed, it can.
And obviously that'd be something that'd be quite problematic for the person over their lifetime. What are the sort of things that you can offer to try and help manage it?
Well, one needs to find out from the patient what it is that bothers them specifically, and there's sometimes a deep burning that's sort of throbbing and aching. Sometimes it's sharp, and particularly those that feel the stabbing and the shooting, lancinating, I think they call the actual stabbing, is quite uncomfortable. And I have just recently had some information regarding some local anaesthetic patches that might be quite helpful to these patients. I think they have yet to be released, but the TGA has approved, but I'm not sure that they are on PDS as yet.
So that might be something to look forward to.
And in the patients.
Yeah, and in the shorter term, are there other options that people might use?
Once again, I think you would have to trial the patient on a medication, and the most common one is amitriptyline. And if that fails, then we could progress to the perhaps more expensive gabapentin, pregabalin, and even in some cases when the pain is very severe, Tramadol has been recommended, but we also have another topical that is available, and that's capsaicin. However, I've had patients who've tried to apply it, and just the rubbing of the capsaicin on the area is tantamount to increasing their pain by tenfold, so it's a little bit tricky using capsaicin.
Yeah. And so they're moving on to the third common one that the article considers, which is trigeminal neuralgia, which is a condition that's more common in females aged 50 and above. How does that present?
Well, it's a classic presentation of a unilateral single trigger of a nerve, of the trigeminal nerve, that is. And once again, there's this sharp shooting pain, and it is sporadic, but very, very, very uncomfortable. And these patients suffer considerably. And this one's interesting because it's the one and the only that uses and has been shown, clinical trials has, and evidence-based medicine has concurred that carbamazepine is probably your best bet for these patients.
Yep. So that's another drug that is actually relatively available, which is helpful.
Yes.
And thinking about neuropathic pain and its diagnosis and management, what are a few key points that you want GPs to consider and remember in regards to neuropathic pain?
I think the most important thing for GPs is to consider neuropathic pain. It's quite something, it's quite different to what we used to learn about pain, and it's sometimes very difficult to reassure a patient who presents with pain that pain that they've had for more than 3 months is real, and that the GP acknowledges its cause as being something that has wound up inside the nervous system centrally, and it continues to produce this pain long after any cause has been resolved. So the most important thing is, I think, for GPs just to consider neuropathic pain as a potential problem for their patients, and to address the problem, and to realise that there are medications and in certain instances just the acknowledgement to the patient that there is this pain can be helpful. Because unfortunately any pain that lasts for more than 3 months starts to not just wind up in the spine, but also patients start to become despondent and even depressed. And being a constant pain, it can be quite not only troublesome for the patient, but also for their family, their near and dear ones, and can extend into their work life, and their sleep patterns can be deranged. And all these things can be helped by the, first of all, identification of neuropathic pain, and then its appropriate treatment.
Okay. So the message is think about it, diagnose it, and then appropriately manage it.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for speaking to us today, Milana, and I'll remind everyone that the full article can be found in the March 2013 edition of Australian Family Physician. Thank you.